body toxic, how the hazardous chemistry of everyday things threatens our health and well-being. Full boat of calls. We'll get right back to him right away with Nina Baker on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. And it just occurred to me, I never got the blog up for tonight, so I'll do that in just a second from crypto news and some other items we were talking about earlier. But first, let's get to Jimmy in Wilmington. He's been waiting patiently for Nina Baker, author of The Body Toxic. Jimmy?
Hey, guys. How's it going, Ian? Nina, good. Great show tonight. Want to say thanks for holding me over the break. I really appreciate that.
Well, I didn't mean to strand you like that, brother, so
no,
thank you.
I just mean not clipping me off there at the very end of the hour.
We try never to do that.
Also, just want to say thanks to you guys for always having interesting programming at night and keeping us awake on our way home.
Good. Well, glad to do that.
Appreciate it. Two quick things. I'll take my answer off the air. The first thing is these foot pads that we're seeing that you put on in the middle of the night, and they supposedly remove, I guess, things like these chemicals.
Yeah, the Japanese foot pads or something, right?
Some of them say that they'll make you lose weight, but I think the heavy metals is the main thing that they're supposed to remove.
That's really true.
My second question is just about the plastic water bottles. As they're being transported across the United States in, trucks and stuff, that someone told me that, due to the heat in the back of the trailers, that, some of the plastic is actually melting off into the water, and I'm sure there's probably some chemicals in there. Just wondering if there was any truth to that.
No, I appreciate that. Very interesting. Have you seen those foot pad things, Nina?
Yes, I have, and I'm curious about them. I'd be curious if any of your listeners have actually given them a try. I couldn't say how they work or if they work or why they work. And the whole idea of detoxifying your body is really out of my bailiwick. But I am very curious in finding out how other people are doing with them.
You know, I'm really glad you mentioned the idea of detoxification, and that is a tricky business because you are talking about toxicity in our system. Did you talk to any doctors at all about it? Because this would seem to be a growth industry, right? And the number of people who have all this stuff in their system, these Jive foot pads, I don't think are the answer, because I went online and I looked at a bunch of consumer reports, and they say there's absolutely nothing to this whatsoever. But taking the foot pads out of it, and the number of the foot pads that they sold, doesn't that speak to the level of interest that people have for getting this stuff out of their body?
No, absolutely. I think there's a great deal of concern, and people want to figure out what can I do to reduce the things that are out there that are in me. And I think that we have to start with eliminating them or substantially reducing the amounts that we put into our stuff.
Well, business opportunity for Nina Baker, I think. Start a product, find a way, create a course, sell the tapes on late night television on how to get this stuff out of your body. I really mean that. I mean, there's some that's a key part, I think, of people feeling better about themselves is feeling like they've got some power over all of these heavy metals in particular that are in our bodies. Mark is in Oregon on Coast to Coast AM for Nina Baker. Mark?
Yeah, good morning, Ian and Nina. Great show. I really appreciate all the information. Really, very useful show, and you guys make it very interesting. These things aren't always really pleasurable to hear about, of course, but it's a great warning to us. We can extend our lifetime right now as we listen. If we act on the advice and the warnings.
Right.
Just to touch on the tobacco issue, they had and it wasn't what I called about per se, but I just wanted to mention it real quick, Ian. You were maybe wondering about saltpeter. Is that the one you're wondering about? Is what's been found in tobacco for at least the last 25, 30 years?
I didn't see saltpeter, but that doesn't surprise me. How about that?
Burning agent, yes.
Yeah, sure. And known as an anti erectile thing too, right? Mm-hmm. Didn't they use saltpeter to try to keep men's libido down?
That's right. They mix it in the food, like in the on naval ships and such like this.
Right.
I was in the Navy, and there was a rumor that we had it in our food, but they never let it be understood to be more than a rumor at most.
I'll be darned. How about
we did
that?
Go to port. We went into port every now and then.
And tried to prove that there was no saltpeter in your system, huh?
Yeah, that's about the size of it.
Okay.
I it's hard to tell when you're young if it's working or not sometimes. But Ian, as far, Nina, as far as the artificial synthetic fragrances that are found in many of the shampoos that we get off the grocery store shelf, as well as soaps and just anything that has fragrance in it, I understand that those are actually made up of many, even thousands of exotic multi-letter, long-letter word chemicals, and that when people take a shower, most people take a shower, some hotter than others, but it's usually at least past lukewarm.
Sure.
You were speaking before, Ian, about tobacco, or rather the chemicals that are in it.
Right.
Those, when heated, they turn into whole different chemicals, and I think the effects, the deleterious, the negative effects that one would suffer, you know, getting them into the body would be compounded greatly, you know?
Yeah, but that's a really interesting point about the atomization of these chemicals on water droplets, that if the fragrances, Nina, are harmful, that these fragrances would be so easily inhaled directly into the lungs through the steam and the water droplets.
Well, they're getting in somehow, and that may be one of the roots of exposure. But fragrances are really interesting, and I'm glad that Mark brought it up. He's right. Fragrances, if you go home and look at your shampoo bottle and turn it around, you'll see something that just says fragrance. And fragrance can contain many, many chemicals, including phthalates, which is used sometimes to fix the scent, to hold it longer. Sometimes it's also used if you have something that's called fragrance-free. It doesn't mean that it doesn't have chemicals in it. It means that it might have a phthalate that's used to disguise whatever chemical smell would have been there otherwise. So fragrances are a big issue, and it really points to a problem that we have with not knowing what's in our products, not having adequate labeling, and that's another area that consumer advocates, when they talk about chemical exposures, are very concerned about. They want better information and better labeling available just right on the product container.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I don't know that labeling is always the answer, just because I think people get sort of, there's sort of the wallpaper effect of labeling. But I'd like to have that option of being able to look it up and being able to, I think it'd be better to see more people out there like yourself proactively labeling what's in the products, not the label itself, but coming, you know, from a position of saying, here's what this thing does. It's not so much the name. I could look at the name and shrug, but actually be able to put in a context of what this might mean exposed over time. Andrea is in Seattle on Coast to Coast AM for Nina Baker. Go ahead, Andrea.
Hi. I lived in Japan for 8 years, and I know the media here has made a big to-do about Japanese women having a low incidence of breast cancer, and they attributed that to soy, and then they found out that they don't eat that much soy over there, which you could tell by just simple observation if you were living there. But I do know that in Japan, birth control pills were never legal there. They never had them on the market. And they also, I don't believe they have hormones in their meat either. I don't know if that, I don't think it's allowed there. So I was wondering if you've noticed any kind of studies that correlate the fake estrogen birth control pills and the xenoestrogens with the breast cancer, because this is something that Dr. John Lee, who wrote a book on menopause, he put that forward as a theory. Do you know anything about that?
I only know that it is a theory, and that a number of the organizations that are involved in fighting breast cancer or trying to fund research into the cause of breast cancer are very interested in research in that area. But as far as having additional information, I'm afraid I don't have that for you.
And Andrea, I don't know that it matters, but remember too, of a past Coast to Coast guest who had researched the correlation between breast cancer and the the percentage of women in a population who wore tight bras.
Oh, really?
And yeah, and his argument was, if you look at country by country, the countries with the lowest percentage of breast cancers are the countries that have the fewest number of women that wear tight bras.
Well, yeah, I mean, in Japan, the bra size isn't that big.
It's not significant.
Yeah.
And they may be less inclined to wear bras. And that was one of the things that this doctor said, that the tightening of undergarments around lymph glands creates these sort of toxic pools right around the chest area for women.
Well,
and it's just a theory, but I always thought that was an interesting one, especially when you look at, you know, around the equator, you go around the equator and you have the lowest incidences of breast cancer anywhere in the world.
Right, but, you know, we've had birth control pills for only about 40 years, and it seems to correlate with the people who started taking them back in the 60s and 70s.
Sure.
That seems to be what's, you know, chickens coming home to roost now.
Right.
You know, that's what I'm thinking, you know. No,
I'm with you. I just thought I'd pass it along for you, too. But I certainly am not disagreeing with that. The chemical chickens, as it were, coming home to roost. First time caller line, Tony's in Vegas on Coast to Coast AM for Nina Baker. Tony?
Hey, Nina, good evening.
Good evening.
I'm calling from Las Vegas. I'm 32, and I've been doing pest control most of my adult life since I was 19. And early on, I really didn't have an idea of what I was dealing with. Being young and all, and invincible. And I worked for the largest commercial pest control company in the country at the time. And we actually serviced the dairy, and we used what's called a restricted-use pesticide, which has a higher toxicity rate, so it's used less in like the homes and stuff like that. And this dairy was required to get the pest control because of the flies were making a problem in the town. Well, we actually sprayed the feed, which would be the hay and the pens of the cows where the chemical would actually get on them. Well, fast forward 2 days later, and I'm watching on the news about a local organic dairy in Armagosa. That's one of the largest organic dairies in the West. And lo and behold, this is the dairy that I was just spraying the restricted-use pesticides on the animals and on the hay.
Wow.
Not organic anymore.
Yeah, really.
Well, and that's the thing. We just don't know, you know. It's so in our food, and it's such big business with the chemical companies. I mean, the largest producer of pesticides is Bayer.
Right.
Or one of the largest out there. So,
right.
I mean, it's so in our system, and I don't want to say it's unavoidable, but it's probably a lot worse than we like to imagine, we like to admit. And on a different subject, Ian, thanks for playing Leroy Moore. I heard you playing him in the break, man. He was one of the greatest saxophonists ever. We were at the show on Tuesday and just read.
Oh, yeah.
Leroy.
Oh, good. Well, appreciate that, Tony. Thank you so much. And the body toxic will definitely give you an idea of the number of chemicals that are out there and how they're affecting you. Vicky is in Louisiana on Coast to Coast AM for Nina Baker. Go ahead, Vicky.
Hi, I've been seeing a lot of bakeware that's made of flexible nonstick silicone. It's advertised to be heat safe up to 500 degrees Fahrenheit in your oven and still remain flexible. Doesn't this outgas in your food? What's this made of anyway?
Yeah, off-gassing like that. Go ahead, Nina.
It might. And again, I try to avoid any sort of plastic and heat. I don't know a lot about the silicone products. I've seen them advertised. I've seen them in the stores. Again, I tend to want to just go back to some of the more basic type of things that you can find in your kitchen. I don't have the expertise to really be able to answer in depth.
What about nonstick food sprays?
I think that's okay. It's basically just an oil. It's not it's not made of the perfluorinated chemistry, as far as I know.
It's those binding agents that I worry about when you talk about those out there.
Yeah.
That's, you know, it could just be oil, but they've done something to it to make it stand up to the heat of an oven. Let me get to Ann is in Oceanside, California on Coast to Coast AM for Nina Baker. Ann?
Oh, hi. Yes. I had a, I wanted to bring up the issue of fluoridated water. I don't know if you went into that in your book. I mean, I've just read so many things about, I know Canada, I think, and other countries have made it illegal to use, and there's a lot of scientific studies on what it does to your body that's, you know, negative. And also, if you know how it, you would be able to, you know, if it's in, I know in San Diego, the city council just voted, even though the city residents twice voted they didn't want the water, but they're going to go ahead and start it up anyway. And if there's any way that you can get it out of the water, like I don't think a filter works, but I don't know if you do a distilling process or something.
I've never heard of being able to defluoridate your water.
Yeah,
before.
And then how? And then it's the thing is, if you have a garden, it's going to be in the food. It's going to be, you know, in the shower when you breathe it in the hot water. That's the thing. Can I bring up one more thing before she answers that question? It's probably stating the obvious, but the thing about the FDA and the researchers I know are really good that they have, and they're finding all these, doing the studies with the animals, but then the bureaucrats in charge, a lot of times I know they don't allow some of their studies to come out.
Yeah.
And then those same people go to work for the drug companies when they stop working at the FDA. It's like a revolving door going.
Sure.
And I'm hoping this next administration will, you know, try to protect consumers better. But if you could please answer me about, okay, you know, about the fluoridation and how bad that is.
Yeah. Did that come up in your research at all, Nina?
It doesn't. I don't go into to that particular thing, fluoridated water. But the filters I do talk about a little bit because they are helpful if you put a filter just sort of the you can buy them pretty much anywhere. If you want to put one right on your kitchen faucet or if you want to get the type that comes in the pitcher with the filter.
Like a Brita filter?
Correct. They are helpful at eliminating some of the things out there that you want to sort of be concerned about. That atrazine is a chemical or a pesticide, an herbicide actually that I write about, and yeah, that would be something that I would definitely recommend is doing some kind of filter on your water.
A lot of people do bottled water, thinking that's the answer, and I'm reminded of a guy we had, Dr. Leonard Sachs, on. He's a prominent physician, Harvard guy, you know. But he wrote this book about men. And it's all about how it's called Boys Adrift. And it's about the problem that we're experiencing in a society, this breakdown between boys becoming men. And there are all sorts of social problems. There are, you know, the emphasis on in some philosophies to see boys as just being sort of damaged girls, you know, or you know, they haven't learned to sit still. They haven't learned to do the things which come more naturally to girls. But one thing he talked about was the bottled water. And he said that the feminization, some of these physical things that are being passed along in boys' bodies are coming from bottled water because the bottled water can sit for weeks inside of hot trucks, that even though you're not heating the bottled water in a microwave, like you were talking about, you don't heat plastic, that the plastic could be heated for a week sitting in a train car in Arizona on the way to the stores, and they just don't need them yet. And he said, we would never know, but he said, if you look at the rise of bottled water and you look at some of the shrinkage, for example, as you mentioned about sperm count, that your average 18-year-old today has like half the sperm count that his grandfather would have had, that he thinks it is plastic bottles and plastic bottles of water that we just don't know are being heated. Any thought on that?
Yeah, it goes back to what I think your caller's name was Mark talked about, and he mentioned that, you know, they're on the back of the trucks and they're coming for miles and miles, and especially those water cooler type, the bigger 5-gallon containers, they are made out of polycarbonate plastic, which again it comes from bisphenol A, and most definitely that is you know, of concern. So I did hear that program, and I think that Dr. Sachs is onto something.
Oh, very good. So you listen occasionally to Coast to Coast then?
I do, yeah.
Oh, how fun is that? Well, thank you, Nina. The Body Toxic, Nina Baker. We'll talk more about the hazardous chemicals in your body next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. We left David hanging before we got to the bottom of the hour, so we'll pick him up in just a second. And you too, there's still time. Your question, your comment for the body toxic Nina Baker next. And I've fixed the blog. I hadn't actually filled in the blank yet on the blog. So if you went to coasttocoastam.com, you would have seen last night's blog as I filled in for George on open line night. We had a very lively conversation last night in the first couple of hours about some research, which was very controversial, and many interesting emails. So thank you all for writing. Can't write back to everybody, but I try. And also, then, if you go to the blog tonight, you'll see it at coasttocoastam.com. It brings you up to date on some of the crypto news you might have missed from the first hour of the show. Always worth grabbing Streamlink and listening to the programs later on if you can't keep up on a night-to-night basis. Easy to afford, we hope, and gives you a chance to check into the show whenever it's convenient for you through the website. It's Coast to Coast AM and Nina Baker, the body toxic, next. This is Ian Punnett. Robin is in Oakland, California, but if Robin can just hang on, David has been on a little bit longer, I believe, in Devil's Pond, Georgia, for Nina Baker and the body toxic. David?
Good morning, Nina and Ian. How are y'all this morning?
We can just be Ina together.
Ina. Oh, I was going to say, you've only got three letters in common between you. I've got two things. The main thing I told the screener about was the relationship between, one of the more mundane poisonings of the past, lead. You remember, we were always concerned about lead
right.
in children and
sure.
eliminating it. And, it's less of a problem now. But my mom's got a situation. She's got osteoporosis. And, of course, the way lead goes into your body over time, it's stored in your bone.
Right.
Well, as you start going through osteoporosis, the calcium comes out. But the lead apparently starts coming out of your bones, too. And she had industrial exposure. She worked in a petroleum distribution company, and she lived on a farm, where there was farm equipment and, fertilizer, all the various chemicals they used back in the 30s and the 40s. And I was just wondering if there's been much research done on, lead leaching out of the bodies, of adults. Especially with osteoporosis. Then I've got a second one to bring up.
All right. Hey, Nina, what about bones and your research on that and what you've been able to find?
I really didn't look at the leaching of lead from bones in particular. I was really interested in lead because lead is one of the first of these substances that got a lot of attention. And the things that occurred to reduce exposures to lead have made a difference in terms of the levels of exposure that we now see when the CDC does this biomonitoring work. But in what terms of what you're talking about in your mom's particular situation, unfortunately, it's not something that I can really add to.
But what things are stored in bones? And don't go anywhere, David. We'll get back to you. But aren't there specific things that end up in bones as opposed to soft tissue? Or does it? Or the chemicals just end up everywhere?
Well, as I was saying, some of them are really accumulating in fat, and they're pulsing through us in our blood, and the bones. I think what we're talking about are the metals, but I'm going to have to double check that. I wouldn't go with just me talking off the top of my head right here.
By the way, David, when I was a teenager, and I'm not making light of your mom's situation at all, but my friends used to say that they were working for a petroleum distribution company when really all they did was pump gas. But that's how they said they thought it sounded better to the girls to say that they were petroleum distribution specialists. They're really just pumping gas. But all right, David, so what was your other question for Nina Baker?
This was maybe one of the chemicals you were trying to think of, and then, but I've got a question on how it affects us. Were you trying to think of, tobacco? Were you trying to think of formaldehyde?
That's exactly what the one I was trying to think of.
Okay.
Right.
But,
yeah.
Now, there was a problem years ago about formaldehyde being used in the blow-in type insulation in homes. To create the foam in the walls.
Right.
Is formaldehyde also a problem with foam, like in mattress pad, pillows, things like that, as it ages and begins to break down, does formaldehyde start coming back? Yeah.
Isn't that the number one off-gasser is formaldehyde?
Formaldehyde is a problem. The thing that immediately jumps to my mind is the whole FEMA trailer problem with formaldehyde and these people who lost their homes, ended up in these trailers, and then ended up with further being victimized by running into all sorts of situations related to the formaldehyde exposure. It was sort of the perfect storm for off-gassing with the type of humidity and heat that you have in the Southeast, and the
right.
use of those trailers that were, you know, nobody thought that anybody would live in them on a long-term basis, and it was not a good situation. So,
but of course, in the South, they would be closed air systems because they would close all the windows and the doors, and they would rely on the air conditioning to keep these trailers cool. But that only compounds the problem in that you're just circulating the same internal air over and over again in many cases. Hey, the formaldehyde and the off-gassing reminded me, my wife was painting one of the kids' rooms, she was using a paint that touted that it was, odor-free, off-gassing-free or whatever. And you really couldn't. I mean, you painted with it, and it had no odor, and it didn't have anything that you could tell was coming off of the paint as it was drying. Yet she had the worst headache she'd had in years and years while she was painting that room. And now I wonder whether, when you mentioned before about the fragrance-free things are really just a separate chemical to mask the fragrance. It doesn't of the chemicals. It doesn't actually make the chemical go away. You just can't smell it.
Yeah,
any thought
right,
on that?
As far as the fragrances are concerned, and I do think I don't. You didn't mention whether it was labeled low VOC or no VOC, but I when I work on my house or do home projects, I always buy that type of paint. It's a little more expensive, but I think that it's worth it. It's just another way to reduce exposures, and especially if you got kids at home.
Right. Yeah. No. If it was more expensive, I guarantee you, my wife bought it. If it's whatever, if more expensive, she's in. Robin is in Oakland, California, on Coast to Coast AM. Robin.
Good morning, Ian, and thank you so much for a wonderful show. You do it every week. And
well,
Nina,
thank
you so much for doing this book.
Isn't it good?
It's wonderful. And by the way, I just wanted to say that Gina, your screener, is just a delight.
Yep.
I have two questions I wanted to ask, but did you really actually run that Asmodium person on the air?
No, that's a promo. That's an off-the-air promo that people on hold would have heard. So,
I don't
think it's ever been run on the air.
I wanted to mention, you know, that he's just a freshman in zombie school because it's Asmodeus, and that's supposedly a chief demon in Jewish legend. So there you go, off him.
Oh, very good. I appreciate that.
I have two questions that I would like to find out if Nina covered. One of them is did you find that there was any chemical or chemicals that might be related to fibromyalgia syndrome? We have seen such an enormous increase in fibromyalgia,
sure.
And it's 10 times more prevalent in women. I have it severely. The commercials out there are a joke in terms of how they downplay the symptoms. Is there anything that you found that was related to fibromyalgia?
Thank you, Robin.
In the chemicals that I looked at, no, it wasn't an endpoint that seemed to come up. Again, these were chemicals that are disrupting the hormone system, and fibromyalgia was just not a disease that I saw coming up.
You know what? I think that's a really insightful question because the origin of fibromyalgia is so mysterious. Many doctors still aren't even on board on fibromyalgia yet, and they consider it a mental condition. And it seems so pervasive throughout the body that one wonders whether or not chemical deposits in the body for some people might create this unusual reaction where they have all over discomfort. I think that that may be just research that hasn't been done yet, but I think that would be really, to me, I think that would be a really compelling question to start with, is whether or not there could be a causal relationship between those two things. Eileen is west of the Rockies on Coast to Coast AM for Nina Baker. Eileen?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Ian. Thank you, Nina, and thank you, Gina. I have a question for Nina about organophosphates.
Okay.
One in particular, I was exposed to it, and I have suffered ever since 2004. It's the carbamate called Carbaryl, and the official name is 1L, small L, Napsil, large N, methyl carbamate. And it's sold in stores under 7.5. And I was wondering if there's anybody out there who could help me, or is there any anti-chemical that I could take that'll neutralize it in my body? Is there anything out there that will neutralize it on the ground when it's put down as a bait to kill insects and stuff?
I am not qualified to answer the question. I wish I could. I'd be interested to know if you've asked your doctor or for any kind of insight about that.
You know what? I think we've uncovered something in the last couple of questions. I hope you're impressed by the level of the questions. The focus of the question, it seems to be in pointing in the area of your book, but also, you know, as you say, you didn't research every aspect of this, so there might be other things out there that they need to find elsewhere. I wonder whether sometime we might revisit your work with a companion interviewer, that there isn't somebody else out there that's doing different types of chemical work, and those two things together, your work and their work, might go together very nicely. Because I don't know, I think these are really incredible questions. They just may be questions too far ahead of the curve of an answer of somebody in academia who's doing it, so that you would have the studies to work from to write about it in your book.
Right, and I think that would be something really interesting and worthy of doing. I'd love to participate in participate in that. And I do think that just what I've learned in talking to physicians and even talking to my own physician, they unfortunately they don't know a lot about environmental health exposures, and it's not something that they really study in medical school. And it's you know, sometimes you just get a blank look when you bring it up. So I'm totally sympathetic to the situations that many of your callers are in, and I do think that there are folks who are looking at this and could provide that kind of information.
Yeah, they may be very used to people not being able to answer that question. It may be a suspicion they've had for a long time, and it's not surprising that you can't, because so far nobody has been able to, especially I go back to that fibromyalgia question. I think that's really interesting. Jim is in Burbank on Coast to Coast AM for Nina Baker. Go ahead, Jim.
Good evening. The earlier caller some time back that mentioned he was in the aviation industry for so long. Myself, I am a machinist for, this is my 39th year or so. My dad worked at Lockheed Aircraft here in Burbank, where KFI is located, for 48 years. Every one of his friends is dead. But my dad worked in quality assurance, where he was pretty much away from the manufacturing environment. But what really harmed a lot of the groundwater here and caused a big Parkinson's pocket here in Burbank, really pretty notable, is the fact that they used to fill up the SR-71 Blackbird, and back in those days, the wing sections didn't meet up. They met up only when it was at high speed, and they heated up, and then the seams grew together. So they would slosh as much fuel, just enormous amount of fuel, but it was pouring everywhere. And they'd say, get up, and then they'd get it up in the air and get it up to speed, and then they'd mid-air refuel it. And then it would take off. The edges of the wings were red when it was operating.
I'll be darned.
Many, many years later, they came up with a bladder that could withstand that kind of heat.
How about
so
that?
Then no problem anymore. But for years, hundreds of gallons, thousands of gallons of jet fuel were just sloshed about. And guys,
and these guys, this was probably pre-OSHA in many ways, where they would just been inhaling that stuff left and right and having it on their clothes.
And soaking it into the ground. And don't forget, in those days, OSHA, that was highly classified. Those people couldn't even.
Oh, that's true.
They couldn't hear a story about it.
Of course. There was a Blackbird. The OSHA wasn't allowed to go in on the Blackbird.
Also,
that's right.
Lockheed being very early pioneers in the non-metallic carbon fibers and radar immune and all those. Many of those packages came in. It just said Agent A with a serial number. You look on the back, no directions, no cautions, no nothing, no gloves, no respirator.
Right.
Lockheed lost, I would say, in the dozens of office workers who were never exposed to that stuff, but their offices were over the top of where they were doing a lot of the R&D of that stuff, and they always complained upstairs, what smells like brand new carpet, or what smells like a new car, or all those people are all dead.
At what age did your father's colleagues start to die off?
Ooh, Stan Sparks, I remember. When was that? I would say I'm 51. I was probably 30, so starting 20 years ago.
Okay. So, I mean, how old were they? Were his colleagues?
They were all roughly the same age. My dad...
Late 50s, early 60s?
Well, my dad now being... I'm 51. My dad is 85.
Right.
And at age 14, 15, all those fellas, I knew all of them because we all worked a second job. All the old fellas had a second job over at the sports arena and the Coliseum over here.
Right.
So we all drove in a carpool, and I was the young whippersnapper, and they were all Lockheed employees. Wally Bloomfield worked on the Navy side, P3, the Orion Project. A couple of fellows worked behind what they called the Iron Curtain in those days, which later became the Skunk Works. I knew all those fellows. They are all dead.
Well, it's very interesting, Jim, and I'm sorry to hear that. And it's so fascinating. You told the story so well, too. So thank you. And gosh, Nina, doesn't that just reinforce again how it is that there are all these unsolved mysteries out there right now in the chemicals, and we really don't know how they relate to our bodies? We can only kind of look around and take a lot of notes and hope that someday somebody does some real research, don't you think?
Oh yeah, and really the work has begun, and the occupational exposures are terrible, and they the story after story of this type of thing. But what I really hope listeners will take away tonight is that these chemicals are in just our everyday things as well, and we really should pay attention.
Yeah. Well, let's see, a couple of people have been hanging on really long. Donna in Colorado, I think, has been hanging on the longest. Donna, it's got to be real quick for Nina Baker. Go ahead.
Well, mainly I was just wondering, if I got rid of all the plastics and the Teflon and everything, would that make a big difference or very
great little? Question. Very good question. Big difference if you get rid of all of it, if you chuck it all?
It's going to make a big difference if you are concerned about your children and your grandchildren. I think, for people who are baby boomers, our exposures have happened. And
we're doomed. Let's just go ahead and say we're doomed. But
really, I saw an ad the other day, and it was, I can't even remember the product, but it was a said, if you care about your children and your grandchildren, buy this. And I thought, wow, that's exactly what we have to be concerned about right now.
That's the body toxic. Thank you, Nina Baker.
And thank you.
We look forward to having you back again sometime. Good luck with this book, and thank you for being so patient with all of our questions. In the meantime, have a great week. Deus te amat, and I do too.